I'd like to invite Jordan to come on up. We have a kind of a really wonderful opportunity this morning. I believe that God has a very clear and specific word for us as a community. And this has been something that's been bubbling up in Jordan's heart for a little while, like at least a couple months or so. And then her and her husband actually live this out really, really well. When I watch the two of them, when I watch how Jordan interacts with people as she's going to talk about today, it's like this is one of the couples, this is one of the folks who really practices the biblical kind of gift of hospitality well. And so, and I believe that God's given her a word for us as we've been going through our neighboring series that's really clear and specific. With that said, let me also say this. One of the things that, because people ask me this all the time in kind of church context, one of the things that we believe here wholeheartedly is that God calls us based on gifting more than based on gender. And so lots of churches practice like a gender-based ministry that men can do certain things and women can do certain things. We don't believe that God operates that way here at the Vineyard, that he calls and equips us based on his gifting to us more than based on gender. And so we want to give both men and women freedom to explore God's gifts in their lives. And so I'm very excited to have Jordan preaching and sharing the message with us this morning. And I just encourage you guys, like, tune in, because this is a really, like, key thing that God's calling us to as a community.
Thank you.
You bet. Rock and roll.
Okay. Something like that. So thank you for coming this morning, for letting me hop up on here and yak with you. This is our last week of the building block series that we've been doing, this thing about getting to know and love our neighbors and really do that thing that Jesus talked about, loving our neighbors as ourselves. And I'm betting by now that this whole thing of learning to love our neighbors has brought about some questions, like maybe, how do I get to know my neighbors without being creepy? Or, because it's true, it can feel creepy. Or maybe you're not so great at small talk and you think, what in the heck am I going to say after I ring the doorbell? Or maybe you have discovered that your neighbors aren't following Jesus and you feel compelled to help them do that. How is that going to work? And that last question is really where we're going to sort of camp out tonight. And ask ourselves, is it really that easy for our neighbors to meet Jesus living next to us? Because I kind of think of the church as the crazy in-laws of Jesus. Like, if you guys think about, if anyone here is dating, or they recently got married, or remember those years when you first were in that relationship, there was always this epic time of meeting the in-laws. Do you guys remember this? It was like maybe the extended holiday weekend where all of like crazy Uncle Frank and like their whole family was together, and you picked out the right outfit that you thought they all would like. You show up, their house smells weird, their wallpaper is clearly from 1962, and they are cooking food that your mama has never made and you have to pretend to like it. It was just weirdness. And not only that, you try to say things that won't offend them, you're trying to fit in, and inevitably there is the weird family tradition that comes up that you are pulled right in, like sounding naked with your in-laws. Something scary and disgusting like that. That would have been a complete deal breaker for me, and I'm really glad that didn't happen. I hope it hasn't happened to you. So as people in the church, with our own way and comfort of doing this, we are a little bit like our in-laws. And if you've been in the church for years, you probably feel like, this is family. We are doing this normal. This is absolutely right. Like, what is weird about this? And if you're new here, you're probably thinking, you guys are weirdos. Like, there were people doing worship, people worshiping doing the touchdown pose. Like, why? Why are you doing those things? And so attention drives or pops up in the middle of this. Because do we then expect our neighbors to act like us if they want to meet Jesus? And this is a question that isn't new. Fortunately or unfortunately, it has been in the church for a long time, actually since like some of the beginning stages. And so we're going to look at some challenging insight today from Paul in Romans as he addresses this exact topic like hundreds and hundreds of years ago in the early church. Can our neighbors follow Jesus without looking like us? And so if you want to grab a Bible, there's some in the chairs in front of you. We'll be on page 783. And I'm just going to read it to you. It's Romans 3, 9 through 30. So what shall we conclude then? Do we have any advantage? Not at all. For we have already made the charge that Jews and Gentiles alike are all under the power of sin. As it is written, no one is righteous, not even one. There is no one who understands. There's no one who seeks God. All have turned away, and they have altogether become worthless. There is no one who does good, not even one. Their throats are open graves. Their tongues practice deceit. The poison of vipers is on their lips. Paul is serious here. Their mouths are full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Ruin and misery mark their ways, and the way of peace they do not know. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Now we know that whatever the law says, it says to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be silenced and the whole world held accountable to God. Therefore, no one will be declared righteous in God's sight by the works of the law. Rather, through the law, we become conscious of our sin. But now, apart from the law, the righteousness of God has been made known, to which the law and the prophets testify. This righteousness is given through faith in Jesus Christ to all who believe. There is no difference between Jew and Gentile, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and we are all justified freely by his grace, the redemption that came by Christ Jesus. God presented Christ as a sacrifice of atonement through the shedding of his blood to be received by faith. He did this to demonstrate his righteousness because in his forbearance he had left the sins committed before him unpunished. He did it to demonstrate his righteousness at the present time so as to be just and the one who justifies those who have faith in Jesus. And this is where Paul ends here. Where then is boasting? It's excluded. Because of what law? The law that requires works? No, because of the law that requires faith. For we maintain that a person is justified by faith apart from the works of the law. Or is God the God of Jews only? Is he not the God of Gentiles too? Yes, of Gentiles too, since there is only one God who will justify the circumcised by faith and the uncircumcised through that same faith. That's a bit of a chunk here, and I know it sounds like I'm jumping right in the middle of a case that Paul is building, and he's already been saying things that build part of this case, so let me give you a little bit of background and idea of what has already been said here. So Paul is talking to the church in Rome, and at this time, the church is mostly Jewish people, and he is addressing this issue that's popping up. And the issue is, can Jews and Gentiles follow Jesus without looking like a Jewish person? Now, why is this even a question? Because at that point, the church was mainly Jewish people. They were the people who established the church. They were kind of the first people who met Jesus. They were leaders of the church. And if you know anything about Jewish culture or religion, you know that there is a very distinct law and rule and the code of life that the Jewish people follow. They had religious laws about what they could and could not eat, they could and could not wear, how they operated in community, in marriage, when they have a baby, when you get sick, when you're menstruating. Like, they literally have rules about everything. And so, as they begin meeting Jesus, the Jewish people, they take their way of life, this code of living, and they combine it with their new faith in Jesus. And so in some ways, they still look a lot like they're Jewish, even though they're beginning to follow Jesus. And the tension arises when suddenly people who aren't Jewish are interested in Jesus. And those people are called Gentiles. It's a word we don't really use much anymore, but it simply means basically people who aren't Jewish. They don't have the same code of living. They're eating what they want to eat. Maybe at this time, worshiping many gods, marrying many people. And they're interested in Jesus. And typically, what even heightens the tension is they were avoided by people in Jewish culture. They were considered unclean. And now they want part of what the Jewish people are doing. And tension arises because the big question then is for the Jewish people, can these people follow Jesus and not look like us? Like, is this going to work? And so, fast forward to 2011, in this room this morning, that same tension is right here. And there may be some of us here who are Jewish, but most of us, I would guess, are technically Gentiles. There weren't a whole lot of Norwegian Jewish immigrants to this area. Probably not. But we have the same tension here, because as church people who have their own way of doing this, as we are in our neighborhoods and we see our neighbors who are Buddhists or atheists or agnostic or whatever they might be, we start asking the questions ourselves, can those people follow Jesus and not look like me? So, Paul starts at a pretty genius place, I think. The first thing he addresses in this sticky cultural web is how you and I actually look exactly like our neighbors, how the Jews and the Gentiles really were exactly alike. And the reason why is that he says we are all broken to like the brokenest degree, like our guts are all cracked. And if you remember that little piece that I read there, he said some pretty powerful things. In verses 10 and 11, he says, there is no one righteous, not even one. There's no one who understands. There is no one who seeks God. And at first blush, we agree with Paul, because this is like stuff we learned in Sunday school. Of course, we're all sinners. We all need Jesus. Of course we believe that, Paul. But psychology shows we don't necessarily believe that, because this is what we do as humans. We naturally navigate and herd into groups that have nice little boundaries around them. And what we look for when we navigate into groups is we look for the group that we think is doing it better. Or it may be because of our upbringings or backgrounds or experiences, we find ourselves in a group and we stay there because we think this is the group that has like the superior way. We're doing it right, they're doing it wrong. And maybe my job is to figure out how to get you guys to come in the group, or, you know, I'm going to have to defend our group, or I'm going to be really attached, or my identity is going to be part of this group. And if you think about it in our culture, it happens all the time, like more on a surfacey scale even. Like, think about you computer people. We have, you guys already know, we have Apple people, and we have PC people. And you guys have bumper stickers, you have commercials, you cried when Steve Jobs died. Like, this is a very serious rivalry you got going on. Or how about sports people? This area is like charged with, I see a guy with a Vikings shirt, and Packers people. And my mom is here, so I may or may not be in trouble for saying this, but she may or may not have locked herself in her bedroom and cried after a certain Vikings loss a few years ago. And we are attached to our teams. I'm sorry, Mom, but that is a great story. And not only that, but you guys never wear purple sparkly shirts on any other day of the year except when the Vikings play. Like, you are willing to put yourselves out there for these teams. We are attached to sports, and we love our teams and defending them. But this stuff doesn't just stay playful. This thing of having our teams and feeling like we have got it better goes to pretty serious and dark places. I mean, think about over history, like white versus black, or the Aryan race versus the Jewish race in World War II, or how this has just gone rampant in the church. I mean, this was going on with the Jews and the Gentiles here in Romans. It happened with the Crusades, or how about Northern Ireland with the Protestants and the Catholics? And then what about us as a Vineyard? And we talk about being people where the doors are wide open and we are inviting everybody here, but who are we saying is out when we're saying that we are in? And when does that feeling, that superiority, that thing of we're doing this right, when does it start rising up inside of us? Like personally, individually? Like, is it when we're walking in our neighborhood and we begin taking words to associate who is them instead of us? Like, is it when we look at our neighbors and start saying, that person's shady, or they're ignorant, or man, they can't run a family? Or does it happen more in feelings or emotions? Like when you're driving by a certain parking lot, like maybe the Planned Parenthood parking lot, and you feel disgust when you see the cars parked there. Or you feel this anger inside of you when your neighbors tell you that they're spiritual but not Christian, or that they're living together but not married, and you have an emotional response and you decide they are out and I am in. Or is it when we start looking for their behaviors to try to figure out where they are around the line? Like, you watch and you see their cars are never gone Sunday morning, or they never recycle, or they recycle too much, and they're always eating granola and riding their bicycles. Like, what are the ways that we begin looking for and defining you're out, I'm in? If we had to paraphrase verse 9, I would say it this way. What shall we conclude then? Do we, as people in the vineyard, as people who say, Holy Spirit, come, who drink gallons of coffee every week, who wear whatever they want, and I know what you're thinking, she really did wear whatever she wanted. Do we, people who are known to ride motorcycles or bicycles or whatever to this church, do we have any advantage? Not a chance. Because the point has been made that we and the Catholics and the Muslims and the atheists, that we are all in the same boat because we are all broken to the same degree. Paul is saying the ground is much more level than we think, that the us's and the them's are actually in the same family. So we might begin believing that and getting to the bottom of that, but part of us thinks, like, yeah, but still, like, my neighbors, they really should come to the vineyard. Like, they really need the vineyard. But what are we really saying that they need? Because that is exactly what the Jewish people were saying, that the Gentiles needed the Jewish way of life to straighten them out, to show them how to really do it. And we may not have a list of laws or scrolls like the Jewish people had with rules about everything that we should do, but as people in a Christian culture, we do have our own code of life. We have our way of doing things that help us handle all the things in life and help us know we fit inside of the Christian circle. And I bet if we really wanted to think about it, we could make a list of things that we associate with people being Christian. And I just have a few things here that are just kind of like the general things that we kind of see always happening in Christian culture, or the buzz that pops up. How about we are known for being politically charged and reactive, specifically about a few things. And I think you guys see this and feel this in our culture. We are charged about abortion, about homosexuality, about different political things, immigration, depends on who the candidate is in office. We have a lot to say. We might be known for picketing or protesting or putting bumper stickers on our cars about it. We have been known to say no to swearing, dancing, premarital sex, smoking, drinking, and Harry Potter. Maybe in the early years, first book, Harry Potter. People put a fuss about that. We are known sometimes to say yes to certain social justice things. Things like sex trafficking. We're not saying yes to sex trafficking. That came out wrong. We are saying yes to helping that not happen. Yes to missions trips, or yes to fair trade or social causes. We like getting around those. And what about the vineyard? What is unique to us here? We dress down, we wear what we want. Do you think that people who are normally dressed up for church can walk in here and feel welcome? That's a question I've thought about. We really do drink a lot of coffee around here. Like, every event that you come to, you are, like, we are drinking lots of coffee. We have a very laid-back style. We have our own style of music. We always have a live band. We have our own way of doing things here at the Vineyard. And we can not only name these things, but we mostly associate this stuff as normal, good or bad, because I'm not saying all those things are good, and I'm not saying all of them are bad. In fact, some of them are really good things, and some of them are things that I think God will lead us to do. But do any of these things on their own really bring fulfillment and hope to our lives? by just doing those things on the list. I would say that none of them really cut the mustard. So if you think about it, if anyone here is unmarried and is still a virgin, has a simple act of not having sex day after day after day, has that been the thing that has brought continual radical hope to your life? Do you wake up in the morning and say, thank goodness, today is another day that I can't have sex? You probably don't. You probably are saying, Lord, would you please find me a mate, or whatever you might say. I don't know. Or how about maybe you have given up swearing, and every time you say poop or fudge or doggone it in place of a sassier one, do you feel lasting security in your life that goes day after day after day? I don't think so. It doesn't work for me. Or for me personally, when I check the box that I'm a Christian, that I'm a member at the Vineyard, that I am on staff at the Vineyard, have those boxes being checked brought wholeness and healing to my life? They haven't. I think if we're going to be honest here, doing any of the things, even if they're the right things, they don't actually bring hope to our life. They don't actually transform us or change us. And they don't overcome any pain. So what we end up doing is we not only try to put ourselves in those places to try to like clean up our lives, but it's the very thing that we package up to give away to our neighbors. Because when we recognize who the thems are, we start strategizing how to get them on the inside because it feels better to us. It doesn't feel good to realize that they don't live how you're living. Like, it feels offensive or it feels uncomfortable. And it would just feel better if they did the right things. And so I am totally guilty of this. I have spent a lot of time in my life trying to strategize and figure out how to get my friends and coworkers and neighbors to do the right things or say the right things or check the right boxes or change something in their life so that they can fit in the Christian circle. I remember in college, I was part of a parachurch organization, and something they taught us was that if you were a Christian, something that you did was you led other people to Jesus, which at the time I thought, this is great, I believe that. And so they gave us some pamphlets to help us do that. And I went to a conference about it, I came back from the conference, and a girl who lived across the hall from me in my dorm asked me where I had been and what I had been up to. Now, she was one of the girls that I had considered one of them. Like, she was on the out. And so when she asked me this, I thought, this is a good opportunity to pull her from the outside to the inside with my new pamphlet. So I invited her out for coffee, and I took out my pamphlet, which was called The Four Spiritual Laws. And if you know anything about that, it's basically four statements that you agree to. And statements like, God has a good plan for your life. Do you agree with that? I would ask her. On to the final one, if you want this good plan for your life, what you need to do is surrender your life to Jesus Christ. And we get to this point, and I realize this is the line. Like, she is going to cross from the outside to the inside. And so I'm sweating a little bit, my like a little jittery. I feel like I'm like sealing a deal. And I wait for her, and she says, yes. She agrees to the last bit. She agrees to all four. She's in. And I go back to my dorm room. I email my leader and I tell her, I'm leading people to Jesus. This is what happened. It's so exciting. But the interesting thing is, my friend and I never talked about Jesus again. Nothing in her life changed. There was no more hope. She didn't experience any of the good things that we see happen when Jesus meets people in the Bible. Nothing changed. That was interesting. Or how about my friend Corey? He was another friend in college who was gay, still is gay. And one day Corey asked me if I thought he was going to hell because he's gay. And at that time, I only understood that you could not be Christian and be gay at the same time, that they were separate things. That being gay was something that put you on the outside, that made you them. And I had no idea or no paradigm to think that Jesus could actually be your friend and be gay at the same time, and that he could personally talk to you about your sexuality in that friendship. No idea that that could happen. Or that Jesus cared a whole lot more about being friends with Corey than, you know, putting his finger in this hot topic issue at first conversation with him. And so I answer my friend Corey and I say, yes, you are going to hell because you are gay. And I gave him that response. This is embarrassing, but because I had hoped it would put pressure on him to change his lifestyle so that he could be in. And it did not work. And he was hurt. Obviously hurt. I made it hard for my friend to experience Jesus and his hope and his love. And instead, I gave him the right answer and drew that line again. You're out, I'm in. Whew. I still feel bad about that. And Corey and I have talked since about it, but if he is listening to this recording from Pennsylvania, he can know again that I am sorry. So these rules, they don't work. Like, it didn't help them, and they don't always help us. They don't provide that fulfillment and hope that we're looking for. And no one's lives got cleaned up in those conversations. Our team didn't win, if that's what we're looking to do. So what do we do when they don't want to follow the rules and we can't keep them all? Because I'm guessing we can't. I trip up on those rules all the time. So it only makes things worse when the system doesn't work. And we realize we have a problem when we're confusing religion with a savior. Because nobody gets life from a list of things to do. And it doesn't work for us, and it doesn't work for our neighbors. So Christianity, in that way, does not work. Not if you're using it to clean up your life or get people into your circle or get to heaven. Paul is saying that those religious things don't actually cut the mustard, because these things are not Jesus. There is a difference between Christianity and Jesus, and all of Christianity isn't bad. It was intended to be this thing where Jesus could be met in, that we could be a part of a Christian community and worship Jesus within it. But if we take that from Jesus and make it a set of rules, they are not the same thing. Paul is saying that hope lies in a person, in Jesus. And to be people who are following Jesus and not just a culture or identity means we have to actually disassociate from being just a part of a group and a circle and actually start following Jesus. And sadly, it's easier to figure out what a Christian looks like. We can name a whole bunch of attributes and qualities than what it looks like to actually follow Jesus. But Jesus, clever Jesus, said it really well in Matthew 16. He said, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will find it." Jesus flips the system. Instead of dependent on behaviors or qualities or rules or even fitting in here, we suddenly, the system flips and we have radical, crazy dependence and surrender on Jesus. He is the new system. He was the thing that the Jewish people had a hard time wrapping their minds around. How do we let go of our system and just grab Jesus? And it's the same thing for us. How do we let go of the things that we feel like will keep us okay and grab Jesus? And it's the same thing for our neighbors. They're actually, I think, wondering when they're around us, can I not be part of your crazy in-law family or still be part of your family but not have to look or smell or all these things like you, but grab Jesus? Can I still have him? Jesus is the new system, and he is the system that gets it right. And what about his life? Because when we look at Jesus' life, we see that he really did have a superior way of doing this. He really was remarkable, and not because he didn't go to R-rated movies or because he only gave women side hugs instead of full frontal hugs. Jesus The thing that was superior and remarkable about him is that he had incredible grace to extend to people who did not fit the mold. Like, look at, we're going to look just a second here at some of the neighbors that Jesus had, because he had his own people who were around him and the superior ways that he reacted to them. There was Matthew, for instance. He was a tax collector. He was known to be crooked, probably because of his profession. He was also sort of ousted from community because he took the job and it sort of betrayed his culture. Jesus meets the guy, goes out for lunch with him, and then brings him in to being one of his closest friends. Or how about the woman Jesus meets at a well in John 4? She has been married 4 times before. She is living with a guy now she's not married with. She's part of a culture that's considered like the wrong side of town culture. They're avoided, they're shady, all those things. Jesus plops down next to her, talks to her about the pain in her life, and then tells her he has a handle on a life force that is absolutely available to her and could help her. Or there's the woman in Luke 13. She's crippled. She is sitting outside, and Jesus meets her on the Sabbath. And the Sabbath was a day that the Jews had a whole bunch of rules about because it was the holy day. And one of the rules was you couldn't work. And to them, healing was considered work. But Jesus sees this woman. He heals her. Her body's restored, and the Jewish leaders are upset. They want to know why Jesus will not follow the rules. Why won't you stay inside of our circle, Jesus? And he gets mad, he gets ticked about it, and he basically says, I do not care that it's the Sabbath. What I care about is that this woman gets set free. Jesus was constantly meeting people and his neighbors and reacting to them in a superior way. And he didn't cram them into any organization or a set of rules, but he made himself ridiculously and radically available to them. And he made it very clear that he was the one who had life. And to get that life, you just brushed up with him, that you met with him. That was the way the life came. So here is the only advantage I see we get amongst our neighbors. It's not that we are in the Christian club, that we have our lives cleaned up, but if we are following Jesus and personally interacting with him, that means we are experiencing this grace from him. And that's really good for our lives. It means we're finding out that Jesus likes us, that he wants to do good things to us, and that he's showing us maybe how to operate more like him, that we may be learning to hear his voice, that he's walking us out of struggles, that he might be healing some things in our lives. That feels like an advantage to me. Like, I like when Jesus does those things in my life. I am grateful to have him do that. So what if, instead of trying to argue our neighbors into Christianity or having the right response to their questions, we could instead talk about the good things that Jesus is doing in our lives? And I hesitate to give us some sort of like strategy behind that, because I know it's all what we crave. We want a formula to figure out, how do I do this? I want to do this really well. But what I would say to you is, first and foremost, have recent, frequent, personal experiences with Jesus. Grow in a friendship with Jesus. Explore his voice. Learn to hear him, to feel him. Read about the things that he did and said. And then when you don't understand them, ask him about it. Ask him why he did those things. And when you bump up into a struggle or an issue in your life and it seems to not line up with something in here, begin talking to Jesus about it and allowing him to actually say what he wants to say in our lives. Grow in your friendship with Jesus. He is absolutely up for his side of the deal. He wants to be friends with us. And in that, it means we get to stop owning Jesus, and he gets to start owning us. And as we grow in this genuine trust and friendship with him, I guarantee that our love for our neighbors will be uncontainable, that we will suddenly go from strategy to wanting to see good things happen in their lives, and then finding yourself being the very person who is bringing good things to them because Jesus is rubbing off on you. And how this has looked for me, just to like be personal and share, is there are some days when my relationship with Jesus isn't very good. Like my friendship with him, honestly, is distant. I'm not interested in hearing him. I don't want to hear about the thing that he is wanting to talk about in my life. There's distance there. And on those days, I walk around my neighborhood and I look at maybe the house next to us that's full of guys and I feel irritation. I feel irritation because they're loud, because I can see in their kitchen window and I can see that their counter has a whole bunch of booze bottles, and I'm irritated at the way the girls dress who come to their house. And that's religion inside of me. I'm just being honest. But on days when my friendship with Jesus is really good, when I am allowing him to speak to me, when I am feeling him come close, when I'm letting him do things in my life and I'm asking him questions, those are the days when my husband and I look out our window and we see the neighbors who have been working tirelessly on their house for months, and we have this urge all of a sudden bubble up inside of us to help them. Not because we want to get like our foot in the door to talk about faith or because it's the Christian thing to do, but because we genuinely want to see goodness and relief in their lives. And then seconds later, suddenly an idea pops in our head. What if we bought them a gift certificate and watched the girls for the night and gave them an evening off? Sounds like a really good idea, Jesus. Thanks, that was a good one. Or recently I had a friend over who doesn't follow Jesus, and she began telling me about some hard things that were happening in her life. And I asked her if I could pray for her. Not because I teach the class here about praying for people or because I wanted to prove to her that God is real, but because the Jesus I know, when you meet him, he does good things in your life. And every time that I have been honest about my sadness or a pain that I have experienced and I let Jesus come, he does something good. And so I ask her, would you mind if Jesus did the same thing for you? And we pray and she feels peace. Jesus shows up and does the same thing for her. So if you are growing in a friendship with Jesus, you will need the false security of Christian culture less and less. You won't have to keep shunning your neighbors or being offended by them. You don't have to strategize anymore. You can be genuine friends with your neighbors because Jesus has grace for the both of you. Remember, that's the thing that connects us. We both need him. And he has enough grace for both of us. He likes us both. And lastly, if, as Paul says, is God the God of Jews only? Is he not the God of Gentiles too? It means that Jesus is well beyond us in doing this loving your neighbors thing. That he, I am convinced he has gone outside the church years ago, and some of the people that I am labeling out or them, he is already giving them dreams. He is already giving them hope when they feel absolutely like just despair. He is well beyond us because he is running his kingdom and we can't contain him. We cannot own Jesus. He's the one in charge here. And so just like he did it with Matthew and the woman at the well and the crippled woman and me, he is still doing it in our community and in this city today. This is a really sweet story from my friend that I'm going to share. And the sweet thing about this story is she now is a small group leader here who loves Jesus a whole bunch. And she doesn't love Jesus because she felt obligated to or because she was told to, but basically because Jesus loved her first. And before this story, she was a Christian for 16 years, and nothing in her life really changed. She was doing some of the right things, but she was stuck. And that brings us basically to the start of the story. She says this, 2008-2009 was a horrible year. I was unhappy with life and wanted to run away from where I was. The thing is, I had everything anyone could want. A great husband who cooks, that's a nice thing. Children, pets, a house with a wonderful view, and none of it made me happy anymore. I loved them, but it wasn't enough. And I started to resent it all. I sunk into a depression, I guess, and I didn't want to be around anyone, didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't know I could have more with Jesus. I talked to him off and on throughout it all, me mostly doing the talking, but still depressed, I started to drink a lot. One night in September 2009, I was watching a show on the Illuminate conspiracy theory junk. These are her words. I was wondering what the truth was, and I felt compelled to find and open up a Bible. I later went to bed, but the next day I asked Jesus more about the conspiracy stuff, and I felt him say, "I have that. Let's talk about you." Every random page I opened in the Bible was something I was going through and he spoke to. It was crazy. For 2 weeks straight, I read the Bible every day for up to 7 hours each day, crying and searching. That's a lot of reading. And within those weeks, he helped me to stop smoking and led me to be baptized. And she's not talking to anybody else during this time. Like, she's pretty much isolated herself from family. No one's telling her to do the right things. And yet this stuff is happening. And she ends it with this: "I didn't trust anyone else, but I trusted him. Not 100% because I didn't know what he looked like, but I knew he was teaching me truth." So Jesus was running his kingdom in her life, and he cared about getting the obstacles out of the way so that she was actually meeting him. And the thing about Jesus, besides us not owning him and him owning us, is that we can be really good friends with him and others because who he is. Jesus is genuine. He is a natural attractor of people. He knows, he is spot on with knowing where the pain is in our life. He is a confident and humble leader. He is kind. He is a lover of people and community. And he is the guy that people look to answer questions and for hope. And he comes and meets us. So why don't you guys stand up with me? So every week here, every service, everything that we have, we intentionally make space to not just talk about Jesus, but to personally meet him like we've been talking about. And that's why we do this thing at the end of every service. We give everyone opportunity to actually personally connect with him. And so as we're all just together, I just invite you to begin letting that same Jesus that we've been talking about here personally begin connecting with you. So Jesus, would you come and fill this room with your hope? Do you personally and individually just begin sharing and talking with the people here? And I feel like there are three different groups of people that Jesus specifically wants to do something with this morning. And the first is he wants to bring relief to a group of people here. There is a chunk of us who have been laden with pressure and guilt and perfectionism with trying to do this right. We have tried to keep every rule and make our images and to appear like we have this straight. And Jesus is wanting to relieve that pressure off of him and actually let you connect with him. And the thing about that pressure is that when you mess up the rules, you can't be honest, because then you feel like you might get kicked on the outside. And so there are some of us here who are really struggling with some stuff that we just haven't shared. There is some sexual stuff. There are eating disorders. There's depression. And Jesus wants to cut through that shame and guilt that you're feeling about it and personally talk to you about your pain. There's another group of us here who have wanted to know who Jesus is, but you have felt like you were put on the outside, that you were clearly labeled as them. And Jesus is wanting to break through that barrier and come and grab you and basically let you do what my friend did in the story, that you don't have to trust me or the vineyard necessarily, but you get to trust Jesus. And so your job is to say, "Okay, Jesus, I'll let you break that barrier and come close to me." And lastly, there are people here, you know that you have been, the offense that you have felt towards your neighbors, that maybe you have felt that for years, but you are tired of feeling it. You're tired of walking in your neighborhood and feeling irritation and offense and anger and wondering, can I get rid of this? Is it okay? And Jesus is saying, yes. I am going to let you feel my heart for your neighbors, that you could actually carry Jesus in you as you walk through your neighborhoods and interact with the people who live around you. And so if any of those things are swirling in your life, you're wanting to grab Jesus in them, I'm going to invite you, as well as the prayer ministry team, people who pray around here, would you guys want to come on up, please? But if you're wanting any of these things or find yourself in any of those places, I just invite you to come on up right now and allow Jesus to actually say something to you about them, because he is really good and he loves giving us good things when we talk to him. So feel free to come up even now.